Rick, may I add one more sentence in Danish? Because you like these tongue twisters.
Yes.
And Camilla will translate it.
Okay, great.
Rødgrød med fløde.
Rødgrød med fløde. That's a kind of fruit porridge, you would say, with strawberry. And then you have cream over. That's what we eat in summertime. Everybody eats that. And that's the word that, if you can say that correct, you are accepted in the Danish society.
Danish.
Yeah.
So if you were back in World War II suspected to be a German spy, you'd ask them to say that.
Rødgrød med fløde.
Rødgrød med fløde.
Rødgrød med fløde.
Rødgrød med fløde.
Maybe it's easier to say with a mouth full of that stuff at the
Could
same
be.
Time. When remembering the ideals that America has represented to the world, there's few who could recount the accomplishments and contributions of its most influential citizens, like historian David McCullough. It's been 10 years since we were honored to host David at our Seattle area studio. We invited him to tell us about innovative people from American history who demonstrated what greatness of character really meant. We had just finished talking about his new book about the Wright brothers, and we had a little extra time to explore what he'd learned about more of the people who helped shape our nation. From the Travel with Rick Steves archives, David McCullough tells us about the overlooked influence of 19th century France on American thinkers, artists, and scientific pioneers. They're the focus of his 2011 book called The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris. From the start of our nation's history, France, and Paris in particular, has played an important and unique role. It's long been a refuge and a place of inspiration for American statesmen, inventors, and artists. And what they learned from the French in Paris has then sailed with them back to the United States, injecting art, culture, and innovation into American society. David McCullough explores and celebrates how influential Americans traveled to Paris back in the 19th century and then came home to make history here in the United States. And that's all in his best-selling book, The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris. David McCullough, thanks for being here.
Well, it's my great pleasure. Thank you.
So, David, your book talks about Americans who journeyed to Paris between 1830 and 1900. What's the premise of your book, and why this time?
Because these young Americans were going to improve themselves in their ambitions to do something of value in their profession. There was no opportunity for the kind of education that they knew was essential. Painters knew that there was no school of art in this country. Architects knew that there was no school of architecture in the United States of America. Medical students knew that medical training in this country was way behind that in Europe, and in France they could get the greatest medical training in the world. George Healy, one of the great classic portrait painters of the 19th century, who did Abraham Lincoln's portrait and many others, he knew that if he stayed in the United States and just went struggling along as a painter, he'd never be very good. The same was true with Samuel F.B. Morse, who invented the telegraph, but he was an artist who went to Europe really to perfect himself as a painter. And it was while he was in France that he got the idea for the telegraph. And the medical students who went over came back to transform medicine in this country from what they had learned in the School of Medicine in Paris.
You know, the Atlantic Ocean was much bigger back then, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. In the 1830s, the steam transportation was not very much as yet. They went over by sailing ship, most of them. Then they went by the hundreds. One of the most brilliant examples of it is the great sculptor Augustus St. Gaudens, who, in my view, is one of the most interesting characters I've ever written about. Admirable in the extreme, a street kid, out of the streets, literally the streets of New York, who had no opportunity to speak of until he got to France and got admitted to the École des Beaux-Arts as the first American student in sculpture ever.
If you think of an American who would be a smart kid from a good family in a great American cultural center, by the time they got to Europe, there was just nothing like it. I mean, these guys were like bumpkins.
And keep in mind, they did not speak French because Romance languages were not yet taught in our colleges and universities, with few exceptions. They might have had Greek or Latin in college if they went to college, but they didn't know how to speak French. Imagine being thrown into a hospital training school where you can't understand the language of the man giving the lectures, and you're in with hundreds of other students who are way ahead of you, and you're trying desperately to keep up, and yet they did it. Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., who's one of my favorites in the book, who was a great essayist and wrote Autocrat at the Breakfast Table, among other things, And he would come home to devote his life to teaching anatomy at Harvard for 30-some years. And when it came time for him to retire from Harvard, some 35 or 40 years later, and he had to give his farewell speech, he talked about the professor he'd had at the École de Médecine in Paris.
What a breath of fresh air and sort of a declaration of freedom to be able to come from America where you couldn't dissect bodies.
No.
You couldn't look at a woman's body as a doctor.
No.
And to go over there and to find out, hey, there's a whole new dimension of ability to study.
Cadavers were illegal. And because they were illegal, they were only available on the black market. And because they were only available on the black market, they were extremely expensive. So the doctors got to work with a cadaver, but students never did. So you'd have people graduating from medical school, supposedly surgeons, who'd never cut open a body in their life, doing it to a live person, and very often with little or no anesthetic.
And then in your book, The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris, you talk about Elizabeth Blackwell.
First female doctor.
What a beautiful thing for women to have.
Oh, she was marvelous.
Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely marvelous. And courageous. These are all courageous people.
So how was it? Most of them
had no money.
How was it that Elizabeth Blackwell, I mean, it's such a fascinating part of the book. She went over there and was actually able to come home and really bring the whole world
of gynecology
to the United States.
And she went for the same reason the men went, because she knew that education here was insufficient. And we, of course, were trying desperately, and these young people all knew it, to catch up.
We're paying tribute to David McCullough right now on Travel with Rick Steves. He told us how 19th century American innovators developed their skills in France in his book called The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris. David passed away in 2022 after a lifetime dedicated to popularizing American history and telling its stories with grace and conviction in the value of our nation's ideals. Subjects of his other works include the people who built the Brooklyn Bridge and the Panama Canal, and the early pioneers who settled the Ohio Valley. His longtime publisher, Simon & Schuster, has assembled a posthumous collection of David's essays. They'll be releasing it this September under the title History Matters. They also maintain his website at davidmccullough.com. One of the exciting things about your book, The Greater Journey, is the arduous trip that was involved in just getting there, crossing the Atlantic,
yes,
and then getting to Paris. Talk about that a bit.
Well, they came across very slowly and often not very pleasantly, and they would land at Le Havre.
So everybody really would basically land in Le Havre and then head straight into Paris.
Yes, and there was no train up to Paris. They would go by wagons or giant stagecoaches, they look like.
Right.
They would almost always stop at Rouen. And they would see the great cathedral of Rouen, and it just took their breath away. Now, consider, they'd never seen anything that high, that big, in a work of architecture in their lives. The tallest structure here in the United States was probably Independence Hall in Philadelphia, not much at all.
So we're talking these Gothic cathedrals soaring to the heavens, made out of stone.
And they'd never seen anything even remotely so old. It just took their breath away, and several of them, including James Fenimore Cooper, said if the trip across, with all its agonies, had amounted only to seeing that cathedral, it would have been worth it.
And then, that was just Rouen, which is sort of a secondary side trip today for most people.
Right.
When they got to Paris,
then it was just
breathtaking. Well, Paris was, what, four times the size of New York City?
I would think of that at least. And of course, it was like it always has been. It was jumping. It was life, full of action.
Public spaces, arts, performing arts.
Fantastic food.
Fine wine.
Yes, and museums, and just walking the walk, and climbing to the tops of the hills, and going into the great cathedrals.
All complemented by a sense of fashion and style that didn't exist in the States.
One of my favorite stories of all is that Augustus St. Gaudens, the brilliant sculptor, I think was our greatest sculptor, suffered from depression. Very serious depression. And he went into one of these lapses, and he came in one day to the studio and, by implication, let it be known that he was going to go destroy himself. And he went down, he was on the left bank, and he went down to the river. It was early in the morning, and went out on Pont des Arts, and he was all ready to jump off the bridge into the river. And he looked at Paris in that early morning light, looked at the view of the river, the Seine, and the architecture on both sides, and he said to himself, I don't want to die. I want to live.
Wow.
And he turned around and went back up to his studio whistling.
And 150 years later, that's the bridge that's almost falling apart now because so many lovers go there and lock their padlocks on
it. They're taking them off now.
They're taking them, thank goodness.
Because the weight was too great. Yeah.
But that's when you go to Paris so many times, you just think, you step up from the view or the table and you just say, life is good.
But the restoration of the life force, the life desire, by just being in that spot. And it wasn't as though he'd never seen it before, but he'd never seen it in that light at that moment, at that time in his life. It saved his life.
You know, we've got a lot of travelers listening, David, and when you think about the joy we have in Paris today, talk a little bit about some of the sites. I understand from your book that the Louvre was open on Sunday for locals, but every day for foreigners?
Yes.
Why?
They just want people who were visiting to get the full dose in the little time they had there.
And you had the Seine River boats and can-can dancers and grand boulevards.
Oh, exactly. And just the pleasure of strolling, of seeing. That when you think about Paris, there are no great mountain ranges like you have here in the northwest. There was no seaside view. There's a river, but it isn't a particularly distinctive river.
Right.
What you have is what human beings have built. What you have is architecture and open spaces. When Wilbur Wright got there, and he was looking at how they laid out their spaces, and he said that every important public building has open space in front of it so you can enjoy it. Why haven't we done that in New York? Why don't we do that in our city? He's learning just as those people in the 19th century learned by the very experience of being in Paris.
David McCullough is reminding us of the important role France has played in the lives of prominent Americans, especially as the country grew up during the 19th century. We spoke with David about 10 years ago about his book, The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris, which was released in 2011. David McCullough's many honors during his lifetime included the National Humanities Medal and the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He also received the Pulitzer Prize for his books on Presidents Harry Truman and John Adams. You'll find links to his work and to his previous visits with us in the notes for this week's show. That's at ricksteves.com/radio. We've talked about all these impressive people, young, ambitious people. When you sort of sum up what they learned and then what they brought back to America, what do you think Americans should recognize from France? How have we benefited from France? Because there's a lot of people inclined to be threatened by, you know, French social sensibilities and so on, and they're quick to put down the French. But I do think our countries have a very deep and powerful bond and a lot of gratitude directed in both directions. What can we be thankful for to the French today in our culture? How did these men and women you're talking about, what did they bring home and how did they change America?
Well, first of all, we should be thankful for them because we have our country. Without the French help in the Revolutionary War, we almost certainly would not have won the Revolutionary War. It wasn't just that they sent Lafayette and others over to be on our side to give military support, but they provided money. We couldn't have done it without them.
Right.
And we should never forget it. We more than doubled the size of our country with the Louisiana Purchase.
There you go.
Never forget that. But we should also be grateful to them for the way they welcomed these talented young Americans, the way they were proud to serve as part of their education, to bring them farther forward in their aspirations to achieve something of value. History is about more than politics and war. History is about art and music and architecture and medicine and science and music, all that the human mind and the human spirit can achieve in so many forms. And often it's more important than the politics and the war. Gershwin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Mark Twain, you name it. They are in many ways far more important than most generals and politicians of our past. And they're enduring. They're part of our life.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with David McCullough about The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris. David, we've been talking about statesmen, artists, doctors, brilliant people. There's also a lot of entertainers that just went over there. Buffalo Bill, Tom Thumb.
Absolutely,
Kind of like an American stage show.
Yes.
It's kind of a complicated mix. You've got high thinking and low thinking, basically. How did the French respond to these Americans that came over? Were they seen as bumpkins or what?
Well, they saw us as good showmen. And, of course, some of them were very important. The black musicians who went over in the 20s and 30s, the jazz musicians and the symphony, serious classical music players, and the composers. Cole Porter spent a good part of his life in France and in Paris. And, of course, he wrote some songs about all of that that endure forever. I Love Paris by Cole Porter is one of the best things he ever wrote. And the love of art for the sake that art enlarges the experience of being alive.
These people that you write about in your book, they seem pretty serious. Did they get caught up in the fun dimension of Paris?
Oh, certainly. When they had time. Mm-hmm. The medical students were desperately hanging by their fingertips trying to keep up.
Right.
And most of them had no money.
Yeah, from a practical point of view, how do you go over there with traveler's checks? No. What do you do?
Well, I wonder how George Healy ever survived. Somehow he did.
Yeah, so they were really living month to month? They didn't bring a treasure chest with them?
Oh, no, heavens no. They're living the left bank life of artists, which they loved.
This must have been so much fun for you to write this book. To a certain degree, was taking on this project just a great excuse to go to Paris?
Well, yes and no, because most of the research was all here. It's the letters they wrote home.
Oh, okay.
The diaries they brought
home. That's
right,
yeah.
Really was. My wife and I have been going to Paris since the 1960s, and we adore it, and we never tire of walking the streets and always learn something new. But I went back to walk the walk of all of these people. I went to where St. Gaudens studio was. I went to where the medical students worked and studied, all of that. But that's part of the joy of the job. I sometimes think I take on some of these projects so I can get to go to these places.
I would imagine. So what's one of the simple joys that you and your wife would enjoy next time you go to Paris?
Well, it may sound like this is advancing age, but it really isn't. We just love to go and sit in the park.
Yeah.
And watch the people, watch the children.
It's a quintessential French thing to do.
Absolutely. And it brings back strong reminders of how much value there is in just calming yourself in a beautiful setting and soaking it up.
And David McCullough, if you were in that park and you saw an American reading your book, The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris, how would you hope that that book impacts that person?
I would hope that that person would want to get the most out of their time there and they'd come back just as soon as possible.
Come back to Paris as soon as possible.
Yes.
Develop an appetite.
And bring their children.
Yeah.
Bring their friends. Share the wealth. Share the joy.
Viva la différence.
And I want to thank you, Rick, for what you do. I think your work is extremely important. You've brought joy and interest to so many of us. I'm one of your big fans. And my dear friend, keep it up.
Thank you. I think we're both lucky and blessed to have found a niche where we can do what we love. It
Absolutely.
Gives us energy.
The joy is in the work, isn't it?
It is, and it connects our good readers and viewers with a beautiful world. David McCullough, thank you so much, and best wishes in all your future projects.
Thank you very much.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Our theme music was written and performed by Jerry Frank. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.